This is KDNK Carbondale. Support for GeekSpeak on KDNK comes from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Secure, informed, and connected. 970-948-7992. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going good.
Good.
A little surly this afternoon, so we'll keep it in the laughs.
Dude, I can handle you, man. No problem.
All right.
I've got some digital jujitsu.
There we go.
So,
as always, you can call in 970-963-2976.
Yes.
We're here. We're ready.
Call us. We'll help you fix that printer.
Or at least turn it off and back on again.
Yes. That is like one of our number one skills. So,
yes.
It's
yeah. What's your computer doing? What's your printer doing? Have you turned it off and back on again?
Yep.
That'll get it about 85-90% of the time unless something has changed.
You know what I say to my customers when they hire a Generation X, Y, or Z-er to be their new office manager?
See ya.
Been good knowing ya. Because now they have somebody on site to tell them to turn it off and back on again.
Right. So your calls are going to drop by 75-90%.
Yeah, 95.
Yep.
So, yeah. Let's see. So I actually have just been kind of scrolling through the new Twitter competitor, Blue Sky. It is, the website is bsky.app. And I can honestly say, I'm not blowing smoke here, that I've already derived probably 200% more entertainment value out of my 10 minutes on Blue Sky than I have in my entire life from Twitter. So, but you know, part of it is that I never quite did understand, you know, some social media is so often and like digital messaging is, I'm going to text you or I'm going to IM you or whatever. And I kept wanting to go, well, I'm going to tweet at you, you know, but that's not how it works.
No, because it's it's out to the public. It's out to the world. It's
exactly.
Not, there's not really a direct messaging concept from what I can tell.
It's like the digital stalkers target their victims, but they can't really interact. I mean, you know, I suppose you can hashtag somebody, right? And then it shows up on their feed that somebody's like hashtagged or, you know, mentioned them with a hashtag or whatever.
Yeah, I was just saying, I never quite figured out the whole.
Uh-huh.
The whole layout of that. It's always like you have to take something and retweet it or tweet it for the first time, and there's no, like you said, there's not like a way to directly interact with someone. You have to subvert that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So
get rid of that whole idea that we're communicating directly.
It's right.
Like, you know, I'm standing up on a mountaintop with the bullhorn yelling at you. And I hope you enjoy it.
Is that the whole internet at this point? starting to feel like it.
Yeah, it is kind of feeling like it. So right at the very top of my Blue Sky feed is a tweet and – or what do they call it? I don't know what it's officially called, you know?
Well, it's not a toot. I know that much.
It's definitely not a toot. but anyway, and – see, we geeks have a certain amount of devotion to all things Star Wars and Star Wars related. So I'm going to read off Mark Hamill's Blue Sky post. He says, now that I've fled Leon's site for bluer skies, I'm sure I'll be called a hashtag XX. But personally, I'll always consider myself a hashtag quitter. Twitter quitter. I'm sorry, I botched that. Hashtag Twitter quitter. So, you know, the worst thing is that I can't be a Twitter quitter because I was never a Twitter,
so I have,
a Twitter starter, you know?
I have tweeted once, so.
Exactly. How did it go for you?
It went nowhere.
Yeah.
Nowhere at all.
Both of your followers enjoyed it?
Yeah, I'd have to go look. I have no idea how well it's played off.
Yeah.
I could be a Twitter star and not even know it.
That's funny. So, yeah. Once again, guys, 970-963-2976. It's called Geek Speak for a reason. I'm having trouble talking today. What's it?
Yeah, I don't know.
You can tell I've been in a shop with a bunch of computers all day, and
Yep.
A bunch of solvent. I've been inhaling solvent all afternoon.
Oh, there, that, you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
That IPA.
You know, I was removing the battery out of a 2017 MacBook.
And, oh, acetone, even better.
Yeah. Well, you know what I found out? You can use denatured alcohol as a fragrance-free alternative.
I don't know if I'd call it fragrance-free, but it's like 60%. It's 60% methanol.
I mean, you know, fingernail polish remover is like specifically designed to, you know, it has a, I don't know who exactly that scent appeals to, but it definitely has kind of a flowery scent or
it can, whatever, yeah.
You know, and, but denatured alcohol. And the great thing about it is that like 1 minute's here, the next minute's gone, you know, so, but it's always a little bit nerve wracking because, quite honest, I don't know if it was the last one or the one before that, the last battery I took out caught on fire on me.
Yeah, when you're doing a computer repair and the first directions are open all the windows and solicit your fire extinguisher.
Make sure you got your fire extinguisher handy. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's like so, that one's a little tough, but you know we do it.
Yeah. Well, I got it outside before it like really started.
It was smoldering, and then
yeah. But still, I mean, a little spark that's growing.
Right, and
though it doesn't seem to have any visible fuel,
but because it is the fuel, the oxidizer, and uh-huh. and the it's the whole fire triangle in one thing at once.
Yeah, okay.
Because adding water to it will actually make it worse.
Yeah,
you can't put it out with water. You have to put it out with the appropriate.
You can't put it out with water? That explains a lot.
No, because the lithium in the lithium ion battery will react with the water just like it would, just like sodium or potassium would. Like if they did in your science class, they took a little slab of that and threw it in water and it catches on fire. And so,
you know, being a band geek, I missed out on all that fun stuff. You know, I only got the basic level physical science class and we didn't really get to blow anything up or, you know. We didn't have to use the eye wash station or anything like that. You know?
Yeah, we never had to use the eye wash station, but we had to.
I just always thought that would be like was one of the essential parts of chemistry class. You know, it's like the near loss of your sight. You know, but not quite.
Not quite. You know? So, yeah, just the temporary.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's see what else. Oh, we were talking a little bit about there was a news story about Roblox, right?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to be changing their. Message and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what they are, but it looks like there's some sort of.
I'm so glad you hardly know what they are.
You know,
my 8-year-old grandson knows exactly what they are.
Yes, you
and I'm afraid to ask him what it is. So, I mean, at what point do you get voted off the Geek Speak Island if you don't know what Roblox is? I guess is the question. So
we just have to hit up Wikipedia. Roblox allow users to create and publish their own games, which can then be played by other users. And by using their... So it's a game engine.
So you create your own games? Is that the idea?
Looks like it. Or you play other people's games. Yeah, so it's a game engine and kind of a game marketplace, it looks like, and a few other things.
Got it.
So, and it looks like it... What else does it have going on here? So... it's okay. It's under the MIT license, which is neat. But let's hear at least the proprietary part of it. So,
are you a gamer, Matt? I've never asked you that.
I mean, first person shooters, yeah.
Okay.
So, actually, I was talking. So
FPS.
FPS
is also known.
Yes. Not frames per second. Yeah. Okay. Which is what you need for that. So actually, the first game I cut my teeth on turns 25 tomorrow.
Great.
That's Half-Life.
That was a perfect setup for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's called Half-Life.
Half-Life. Okay.
All right.
I guess it was Gearbox at that time. Anyway, so, but it really kind of changed the, what would you call that? The whole landscape of first-person shooters at the time in 1997. So you had like Doom and some other things prior to that. But, you know, it had like, you know, interactive, so you could like we set up a null modem between me and my friend's house and would play basically a LAN game over a telephone line with
wow
it. So figured out how to do that when I was...
That had to be pretty graphic, Rich.
No, because all the graphics and stuff are done on the computer. It was just the, you know, locational data.
So okay.
There's not a lot of... I think I actually technically broke FCC rules on that, too.
Oh.
Since I was going faster than 56 kilobits per second.
Hey, shout out to the statute of limitations.
25 years.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I remember back in the day, they used to have these the LAN parties. You remember that?
We did that all the time.
Man.
Every Friday night, we could get a pizza in 20 minutes on Friday night from Domino's in Carbondale.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Because we'd give them like a 50% tip.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, okay, these guys called. Here goes the pizza.
Yeah.
There's going to be a big tip. Let's get it done.
LAN party, baby.
Yeah, we did that a lot in high school.
Yeah.
So, and then the other one, Half-Life 2, came out 20 years ago yesterday. So.
Got it.
Anyway, but again.
Are they having a big party for that? Or?
I think if you have a Steam account, you can download, I think, Half-Life 1 and 2 for free right now. And they've kind of revamped them for modern cards and made sure that the modern hardware runs them as close to the original as possible. And they've added some other things, but they have a big list of changes and ways they've made it better and tried to keep it as true to the original form as possible.
Got it. My most important question is the chainsaw, is that one of the weapons that you can
choose?
I know you can in Doom, but I just wonder.
The iconic weapon from Half-Life is the crowbar. Since you're a physicist.
That is so funny you said that. I have a crowbar story for you. All right. So I like that, because, it takes a little bit of skill to really tune somebody up with a crowbar. And, you can't do it from across the room. I mean, that's the thing, So if you're kind of a chicken, none of that. So... Well, my crowbar story goes in the instructions for this battery replacement that I spent the afternoon doing, which has obviously been, it's obviously been translated from Chinese to English. But at a certain point, when it starts getting down to, it starts out with the remove the screws, do this. But then when it gets down to the first room, like, removing a cable, unplugging a cable, it basically says use your crowbar to remove the cable from its socket. And
do they send you a little miniature crowbar? I might get a kit just for the...
No, see, they say crowbar.
But it means pry bar.
They show spudger.
Or spudger,
So, which, for those of you who don't know, a spudger is like a little plastic, little stylus pry tool combination tool that we nerds use.
I have
no idea what the origin of the name is. The origin of the name is kind of questionable, or actually the name itself is kind of questionable, because it's kind of like dongle. You have to smirk when you say it.
Yeah, you have to say it with a smile.
Yeah, you got to say it with a smile. But anyway, so it says crowbar, but it shows a spudger in the picture. And but I thought that was kind of funny. And then later on in the instructions, it makes reference to crowbar again. And at a certain point, I was so frustrated trying to get the center cell of that battery out. It was so stuck. And the center cell, you can't use any solvent on because there's parts underneath that you don't want to, even with alcohol, that you still don't want to get wet. And you really have to, I think I spent 35 minutes on this one 3x3 cell of the battery, getting that thing out of there. And I was so tempted to go downstairs because I've got one of those little mini crowbars and it's exactly the right width. So I did have a little bit of a fantasy moment of going to get that and just thinking, I wonder what would happen if I did this.
Yeah. You know? So in our world, they were originally used for 66 blocks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I can't even imagine how you would do that. I mean, the good old punch down tool is really works well for a 66 block.
Yeah. So. Well, I think it's for disassembling the, you know, for if you wanted to move a line or move a exchange.
Oh,
or something.
Like taking them out.
Use that
so
notch.
You're not shorting. Oh, yeah, because I always went in there with the metal tool and enjoyed watching the sparks. You know.
Yeah.
Because you can't get sparks out of a 66 block.
Yeah. The ring voltage is 100 volts. So there's some energy there.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you my ring voltage story?
It's been a while.
So I was doing a job up at the Aspen Community School, and this is back way in the day. And I did the initial networking job between the four different buildings on that campus. And I was forced to use telephone wire to do the network connections. And I had a set of what they're called TUT systems boxes that convert computer Ethernet traffic into a format that can travel over Cat 2
well,
copper
Cat 3.
Or Cat 3 copper. Yeah. And so I got down to, like, I'm at the receptionist desk at the community school, and I didn't have those little crimp-on connectors that don't require stripping the wire. So I got a couple wires connected to the 66 block, and I needed to strip the wire.
As he motions his teeth.
And I'm using my teeth. Which is a trick my dad taught me.
Yep, it works. And, I've done it.
But, you know, something my dad forgot to mention is don't do that with a live wire or a potentially live wire. And I had punched it down to the wrong spade. I punched it down to a regular telephone spade. And a phone call happened to just come through at the moment when I...
Well, I think the ringing voltage, or it's the... What do you call it?
Dial tone voltage.
The dial tone voltage is still 24 volts.
Yeah.
So even that would give you a heck of a...
I didn't really feel it until the phone call came through.
Okay.
And then I was like Jack Nicholson on the Cuckoo's Nest for a few minutes. So anyway, for those of you who are like feeling tempted to strip wire with your teeth that's connected to something on the other end...
Make sure it's disconnected.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
So... Well, you can, but, you know, it's...
You got to know what's on the other end.
Yeah.
Like, you know, an active phone system.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, that was an interesting job. One of my first networking jobs, getting these buildings connected with Cat 3. So,
a client had dug up their cats, their buried Cat 5, but they had two, what are those, the 12 pair phone ones that didn't get damaged in the...
Oh, okay. Got
so
it.
I ran the receive through one of those on 100 megabit Ethernet.
Okay.
And the return, so the transmit and receive, mm-hmm, on separate cables, and I'm doing that for over like 200 feet, and it works.
Wow. Respect,
so,
man.
So I tried to do both send and receive on one cable, and there's too much interference.
Okay.
But luckily there's two cables, so I separated the send and receive between the two cables
now,
and got waste 100.
Two different pairs within the same bundle, or did you do
one?
You say
well,
separate cables?
No, because you only use orange and green.
Okay.
On base 100, so you don't use four pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So base 10 and base 100 will work on just with two pairs.
Yeah. Yep.
Instead of four pairs.
Yep.
So
I knew that when I first started wiring the wiring network connectors, we were only wiring four wires, which when it really comes right down to it is actually much more difficult than wiring all eight wires, because when you get them all eight of them lined out all nice and flat, it slips right into there, no problem.
Yeah.
When you're trying to like tactically thread 1, 2, 3, and 6 in, it's not pretty.
Yeah, because that's left over from the phone systems where 4 and 5 are blue, and that's the two center pins.
Yeah.
And then you have the pins on the outside of those, mm-hmm, which is your other pair, and which is the pair you're using for send or receive.
Yeah. And you know what the legacy, or what the what do you call it? The middle pair ended up being one pair, and the next two, that's line one and line two.
Line one, two. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yep. POTS.
Yep.
Plain old telephone service.
Well, they don't call it geek speak for nothing, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've gotten your fill. We're not quite done. We do have time for a caller if anybody wants to talk us down off the tech ledge today, because it has been a rich discourse on technical matters here. 970-963-2976 is our number, and our operators are standing by.
Yeah.
They are screening the calls. We've had a number of calls on totally unrelated non-tech subjects that we've had to discard, but we're waiting for you to call, listener, and you know who we're talking to.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's see.
So one of the projects I've been looking from Deep Computing, which is a RISC-V laptop manufacturer, is doing a RISC-V mainboard for the Framework 13 laptop.
Okay.
And so the Framework 13 is basically a modular laptop you can buy. So you can buy the frame, you can get different monitors, different keyboards, different I/O setups, depending on what you want to build the computer for. So, but basically, you can build your own laptop within the system. And so they have, you know, a bunch of AMD and a bunch of Intel boards that are fit in a configuration that fit inside this laptop. But now there's a RISC-V, which is a completely open CPU architecture, so you can run a full open source, open hardware machine based on the Framework computer.
Got it. Well, pardon me, but that's some risky business.
It is some risky business.
Yeah. So it's you know, I never thought RISC would make a comeback. You know, it's but
right.
I mean, did it ever go into full dormancy? I mean, at a certain point, was there a point where
IBM's been manufacturing? You can still, as far as I'm aware, after the G5. So basically, you have the iMac. Let's see, the iMac G4, then the iMac. Did they do an iMac G5? I can't remember. Or was it just the MacBook? Or was it just the Mac Pro that was a
G5? I don't remember an iMac G5. No.
So it must have been just the Pro. So there's the Mac Pro G5, which was kind of the last the last RISC architecture from Apple before they switched to Intel. As far as I know, IBM is still has manufactured and continues to manufacture RISC chips for particular purposes. So there's a company out, what is it called? I think it's Talend Computing, and you can buy a PowerPC, I think up to like 28 cores.
Okay.
But anyway, it's the same kind of processor heritage as the iMac G4, G5 machines.
Now, was the chip that drove the original Macs, was that the Motorola chip?
The early ones? I think it was. I'd have to go look.
Okay, got it. Well, we'll have to go deep on that and report back to the listeners, because I'm sure they're sitting on the edges of their seats wondering just exactly what that is. Because at a certain point, the PowerPC is when Apple started doing the RISC processor.
Right, because you had the 9600 one was the
64040 or whatever. Trying to remember what the model number is. I can't believe I even remember that.
Right, because I remember I used a Mac PowerPC 9600 for quite a while when I was little.
That was a pretty beefy little machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
I'm trying to look here.
We've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, now a $5 Raspberry Pi has, you know, I think it's like a dual core 120 megahertz, 133 megahertz processor and 512 megs RAM. That's, you know, like double my first computer.
Yeah.
In a little $5 package that's like the size of a stick of gum.
Yeah.
And has Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And HDMI output.
Wow.
That's just amazing where we are with all this.
It sure is.
What is that? Is that a
Who
Motorola?
Knows what'll be next? It's
predecessor, successor. Yeah. Yeah, but it's a let's see here. So the Mac Classic 2 is a 680308 at 16 megahertz. For Mac Classic 2.
16 megahertz.
Yes.
Yep. And was that 64K RAM? Does it have that?
Up to 2 megs.
Up to 2 megs?
Yeah.
That's ginormous.
You'll never need more than 640K.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I saved up for like almost a year to upgrade my computer to 2 megs of RAM. I'll tell you, that cookie jar was just... I had to keep my powder dry, as it were. So, yep. Yes, they've come a long ways. And the 10 megabyte hard drives, remember? I don't know if you're old enough to remember that.
I'm trying to think. What was my first drive? It was like a 5.5 inch. What was that thing? 40 megabytes, I think.
Oh, you had a 5.5? One of those
yeah,
the
honking
honker?
5.5
oh,
honkers.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a bay and a half.
Because they made like a 7-inch too, didn't they? Weren't like what the,
yeah,
like the original.
That was before me.
Yeah. Well, you know, if nothing else, every boat needs an anchor.
Uh-huh.
So.
I mean, I did have like 30 or 40 digital Rainbow 100s to play with when I was a little kid. They were manufactured in 1978. So
wow.
They were 7 or 8 years old when I was, yeah, you know, born.
My first was a TRS-80 and Tandy. You load the programs off of a cassette tape.
We had one of those for a little while. I'm not sure which one it was. I remember the cassettes with the games on them.
Yeah. So. I see we're getting close to the time here.
Yes.
It's making sure that we've got all the systems in place for the transition. So let's see. When are we going to be back? We are back in December.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of turkeys going to go down between now and then. Oh, it looks like December 2nd, the first Monday in December is the 2nd.
Yep.
So we will be back.
Beginning of December.
So gather up all your questions.
Yep.
Thoughts, comments, complaints, concerns.
Ideas for Christmas tech gifts. And
oh, there you go. That is far better than my idea, for sure.
It'll be time to order. Just trying to pass the time to order. So you've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Thanks a lot, Matt. And don't touch your knob, ladies and gentlemen.